You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Cutt, and I'm joined again by my co-host, Patrick Fitzgerald. Today, we're going to go over the latest news and notes around baseball, cover player performances from this past week, and give some streaming recommendations at the end of the show. But before we get into all that, Patrick, how are you doing? Long time no see.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Happy to be back after a couple of weeks of some travels and stuff like that. So yeah, I know you guys were holding it down with some good guests, but I'm glad to be back on. And yeah, doing well. Fantasy teams, I think, trying to finish strong going into, you know, the All-Star break coming up next month. And real life team, you know, Orioles keep staying a couple of games below 500, seemingly no matter how many they win or lose. So, you know, I'm still watching, hoping that they'll get on a little bit of a run, but it's been a little bit frustrating. But you know, that's fandom sometimes. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Speaking of real life teams, the Twins have been just awful. They just got dominated by the Tigers today, lost 11-0. But Byron Buxton keeps hitting homers, so that's good for both me and my fantasy team. So I'm appreciative of that. Mick Abel's coming back potentially in a couple weeks, so that'd be nice to have a little bit more reinforcements. At this point, I think the goal of the season is just to have fun, because the team is just awful in general. It's not going to make any sort of push towards the playoffs. But yeah, that's how that's been going. In terms of fantasy teams, it's been a little rough dealing with injuries here and there. But hopefully, you know, I'm able to, you know, get some, you know, good stuff going with all my guys. Murakami was like the big injury hit to my team. And apparently now Brent Rooker also might be hitting the IL. So like literally all my power hitters are just like are hitting the deck. So don't love that in my home league.
Yeah, Rooker's been a frustrating one for me too. And yeah, that Murakami, that's just so much power to lose. And O'Neill Cruz, one that hit me a little bit hard.
Yeah.
It's like he has a cut on his hand. He's going to miss a couple of days. Oh, he has two broken fingers. He's out for a month. That was kind of a quick 180 on that one. You know, tough outlook there.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, the not frustrating thing, but you know, the A's did play a series in Vegas earlier this week, and basically both teams couldn't stop hitting homers. But Brent Rooker was not one of those players who was really taking advantage of that, unfortunately. So would have been nice if that was the case. But unfortunately, that's kind of been the way his season has been going, where you just kind of wish there was more happening. And unfortunately, it's just not.
Yeah, I woke up that morning. I saw 15 to 14, 12 innings. Let's see what Brent Rooker did. Oh, 0 for 5, 3 strikeouts. So he was not exactly part of the high scoring affair.
No, yeah, super unfortunate. That's been also me and Matt Chapman, who we'll talk about a little bit later in the episode, where he's been on the bench in my fantasy team, and I've just seen a lot of homers come and go because I'm not starting him.
Mm-hmm. Bench is better than dropped, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, before we get into the rest of the episode, just a reminder, you can follow our podcast at ThisWeekPL on Twitter. You can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on Spotify, Apple, YouTube. Wherever you listen to your podcast, make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. We are going to move into injury news and notes. We're going to start out with IL placements. Will Smith of the Los Angeles Dodgers going on the 10-day IL with a neck injury. It was backdated to the 8th, so he's only going to miss about a week from when we're recording this. But that does give Dalton Rushing an opportunity to get more at-bats. You know, he's been a really good contributor at the plate, but the unfortunate thing is that he just doesn't have the playing time because there's a guy called Shohei Ohtani who takes over the DH position. And obviously Will Smith is a good enough catcher that they're not going to split that time 50-50 between Smith and Rushing. Ronald Acuña Jr. going on the 10-day IL with a grade 1 left hamstring strain. Unsure how long he's going to be out. He was out for 17 days the last couple weeks ago when he had another hamstring strain. But with Atlanta kind of just you know, doing pretty well in the National League standings, they might take it a little bit slow for his return, just kind of be ready for the playoffs instead. O'Neill Cruz, as you mentioned, he's now on the 10-day IL with two broken fingers. Looks like he's out for at least a month, which is super unfortunate. He was having a really solid season. Strikeout rate was still incredibly high, but he was doing really good stuff when he was able to get his bat on the ball. Kyle Isbell going on the 10-day IL with left foot plantar fasciitis. He's kind of fallen out of fantasy recognition at this point, but nonetheless, he's going to be out probably for You know, a couple weeks, you know, who knows with plantar fasciitis, it's always a little bit of a weird injury. Matt Brash, for those in saves hold leagues, he's on the 15 day IL with a right lat strain, likely out for a month. And Jimmy Santayone, he's going to be on the 15 day IL with a left hamstring strain, but more likely he's going to be out for a month as well. But yeah, obviously, I think the only notable sort of pickup that you could make from these sort of injuries would be Dalton Rushing. But yeah, it's super unfortunate that, you know, some of the bigger names like Acuna and Cruz are going to be on the IL now, joining obviously Aaron Judge as well as one of those big names on the injured list right now.
Yeah, I think Rushing is really the biggest fallout here. You know, that is something that we're just looking for him to get the volume, and now that he has the volume, hopefully he can run with it. There's some, you know, like Jake Mangum's going to get every day run, it looks like, now at Pittsburgh, but doesn't really have quite enough power to really be relevant. So yeah, I think, like you said, that's really the main highlight here.
Yeah. In terms of returns from the injury list, we have Max Scherzer, who came back yesterday. Wasn't the greatest start, 3.1 innings, 4 strikeouts, 3 walks, 5 hits, and 5 earned runs. His teammate Dylan Cease returned the day before. Much better start from him, 6 innings, 11 strikeouts, 1 walk, 3 hits, and 1 earned run. Matt Shaw of the Cubs returned on Tuesday, but he has not played in the game yet. And so kind of he's just more operating as a utility player. And Francisco Alvarez returned on Tuesday for the Mets. So far, he's played 2 games at catcher and 1 at DH. So the Mets are clearly working his bat into the lineup. And hopefully, you know, he's able to have like a decent season this year. As you know, obviously he's one of those guys who has a pretty decent bat, but has kind of struggled with some inconsistency throughout the years. In terms of other injury news, Turk Skubal, he is slated to return Saturday. So obviously a big boon for those who have him on your fantasy teams. Casey Mize, his teammate, also likely to be activated Sunday. Tigers could move to a 6-man rotation. Also depends on Justin Verlander, who he got up to 86 pitches in this most recent rehab start. So clearly it looks like they're stretching him out to be a starter as well, which could be kind of weird. But it seems like his more likely fit would be the bullpen. But in terms of the bullpen, Kenley Jansen is going to be returning soon. He got up to 93 miles an hour in his most recent outing. So a lot of development for the Tigers with their pitching staff. Other players, Connor Griffin, he's resumed throwing at 75% intensity. So I believe he's dealing with like a lat issue. So still no timetable for his return, but he is, you know, getting closer to maybe going on a rehab assignment. Nolan Chanuel, currently day to day with left calf tightness. He was dealing with this last week. And so it's kind of reared its head again. Brandon Woodruff threw 68 pitches on Tuesday in a rehab start. Remains to be seen whether he's coming back immediately or needs another rehab start. Hunter Brown threw 74 pitches in his most recent rehab start, likely coming back next week to start against, I believe it's the Tigers, but that's something to check in the schedule. Jacob Wilson of the A's, he started his rehab assignment last weekend, has played, you know, basically almost a full week of games, so expect him to make his return soon to the Major League roster. Tommy Edman also likely nearing a return. He's actually returning from offseason ankle surgery, so he has not played at all this season. He's about halfway through his rehab assignment, has played 11 games, I believe. And, you know, could basically be more of a super utility guy for the Dodgers right now. Alejandro Kirk could return soon for the Blue Jays. He played 8 innings at catcher in his most recent rehab start. Seth Lugo, unfortunately, got hit in the head by a line drive a couple days ago. He's currently day-to-day, has not officially been put on the 7-day IL list for a concussion, but that's something to just keep track of for sure. Mick Abel of the Twins, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, threw 47 pitches in his most recent rehab start. Likely needs at least 1 to 2 more rehab starts before returning to basically get fully built up. As we mentioned, Brett Rooker, he's currently day-to-day with knee soreness. And the way that the A's kind of talk about the injury, it seems like maybe an injuryless trip for him could be on the horizon, but hopefully that's not the case for him. Matthew Boyd, he had a setback in his return from knee surgery. He did like the full 3-week rehab assignment, and it was set to return, but it sounds like the Cubs are actually going to be not activating him just yet. Garrett Crochet, a little update on him. Sounds like he's going to be out for a little while longer. There's still no timetable for his return, even though initially it seemed like the lat injury wouldn't be that severe. It sounds like it's actually a little bit more serious than we all initially thought. Ryan Helsley starting a rehab assignment today. Good for him and the Orioles that they might be able to get their closer back soon. And Noah Schultz threw a bullpen session earlier this week. Should be starting his rehab assignment soon as well. And his teammate, Braden Montgomery, made his debut with the White Sox earlier this week, hit a homer in his debut. So congrats to Brayton for doing that.
Yeah, a ton of updates there. With the Orioles, it looks like Helsley did pitch today, being Thursday. In a rehab, Simon AAA struck out the side in his scoreless inning, so hopefully a couple more and he'll be back. Crochet and Boyd, definitely discouraging. I actually have them on the same team, and after these latest updates, I think I might have to drop them both. It's, you know, NFBC, no IL. Crochet's not even cleared to throw, I don't think, and they're saying, like, it's worse than we thought. Like, everything that I'm hearing just sounds terrible, so I think if you don't have an IL, Boyd obviously is an easy drop. Crochet is, you know, it stinks to drop him because he's your first round pick in all likelihood. But I mean, based on what I'm hearing, you know, it sounds like 2+ months, and then what are you gonna have left at the end of the season? So, yeah, I think I'm making that, you know, might be making that tough decision this weekend.
Yeah, it's always hard in those no IL leagues to figure out, like, at what point do you drop basically a first or second round pick, right? Mm-hmm. I'm kind of dealing with that right now with Lindor. I mean, he was more of a third round pick, but still, you know, that's not a guy that you just let go easily. It does sound like he's making some progress, but at the same time, it's like there's really been no news about Lindor. We don't really know how his return is doing. So, yeah, it's always a challenge when you come up to those sort of situations.
Yeah, last year I had it with Sale and Schwellenbach. I think Sale was like he fractured his shin on like a diving. He broke something on a diving comebacker, and then Schwellenbach obviously had the elbow thing. And I dropped both of them, and Schwellenbach, you know, never came back. So you feel like that was the right decision. But then Sale came back and had like 6 great starts that I probably could have used, right? So it's tough because obviously hindsight is 20/20. But sometimes, you know, I feel like the ones that you make the cut and you end up regretting it, those stick with you more than the ones that, you know, kind of fade into the background because the guy never comes back from injury or never, you know, has any production for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's always kind of a tough thing to make those decisions, especially in those types of leagues. A little bit more forgiveness, I think, in maybe some redraft leagues where it's like a 10 or 12 teamer where, you know, you're able to stash these guys in IL. But yeah, in FBC, man, it's just such a brutal format sometimes.
It can stick with you when you know, compare the guy you cut to the lack of talent that's usually available on the waiver wire.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for our news and notes. Moving on to player performances. We haven't really done this segment in a couple weeks, so it's nice to get back to our normal schedule. But yeah, who you want to bring up on Friday?
Yes, we will get back into it with a guy that seems like has maybe been a thorn in both of our sides for this year so far. What's chapping everybody was Ryan Clark's hitter recap on the 5th, which is for Matt Chapman. And that is the guy we're going to talk about, Giants third baseman, of course. It had, you know, I'd say had now because it's been a crazy last 2 weeks. It had been a season to forget for Matt Chapman, who entered the game of the 5th with just a 235, 314, 338 stat line and only 2 homers. And this could be the game that really just kind of jumpstarts his whole season. He put up, you know, a great week's worth of stats in this one game. 2 for 3 with 2 homers, 2 runs scored, and 8 RBI. Struck out his first time up and then turned things around quickly, bringing in some runners with the bases loaded, and then a sac fly, and then a 3-run homer for his final at-bat of the game. So he absolutely torched the Cubs in this one, and he's just been going since then. I think it was yesterday. It was earlier this week, at least. He had another 2-homer game, and June's been great for Chapman. He's got 5 homers, 18 RBI, and he's hitting .469 right now. On the season as a whole, he's made his line pretty respectable, even though he's still a little light on power with just 6 homers. But do you feel like he's done enough to recover his stock to where it was in the preseason, which was he was usually going like between pick 150 and 200, kind of like third baseman 10 through 12, so like a back end starting third baseman. Are you believing in him rest of the season at that, or do you feel like you still need to see a little bit more production? Or does this hot stretch have you feeling like he could soar even higher than that?
Yeah, this was kind of similar to the discussion I had with Josh last week about Austin Riley, where it felt like Austin Riley was kind of the last group of like productive third baseman, and then right after him comes Matt Chapman. And that's in that kind of, you mentioned that third base, you know, back of the 10th to 12 range in terms of rankings. And I think maybe this, for me, bumps him back up to that conversation of being, you know, the 10th best third baseman. But I don't know if I'd really want to go higher with him. And I guess the reality is that it's been a hot week, or maybe a hot 10 days, I would say, for Matt Chapman in the month of June. Basically, from March to June 1st, he's been kind of non-contributor, right, in fantasy terms. But it's been a really great month, and yet I still worry that this is just a flash in the pan. You know, if you look at the player rater, he's currently 17th right now among all third basemen. There's been, you know, a decent set of, like, young third basemen that have leapfrogged him. Miguel Vargas, Sal Stewart, Casey Schmidt, just to name a few. And part of me would rather have, you know, those guys than Chapman right now. Obviously, those all three of those guys are doing really well, so that's kind of a obvious statement to make. But, yeah, I think Chapman at best is still maybe a top 12 third baseman, kind of in that back three range that you were mentioning, rather than someone who could maybe push his way up into the top half.
Yeah, I think that I do generally agree with you. He hasn't stolen a single base this year, and I know the Giants' offense has picked it up lately, but still they do seem to be a below average offense, which is going to hurt his counting stats. So if he's not going to, you know, give us at least those chip in steals that he's given us the last couple of years, I do have a hard time seeing him like crack into the top 10 at third base. He is on pace to post like his career lowest strikeout rate, which is pretty interesting. And his bat speed hasn't really changed from last year, so he just hasn't really been making as good of contact, even though he's swinging just as hard and seemingly with a similar swing. So, yeah, I think some of this is obviously him improving at the plate, and some of it is probably just some positive regression. You know, he wasn't going to hit 200 with a 600 OPS all season. So, yeah, I think that, you know, if you're patient with Chapman, obviously you've been rewarded now by this great stretch, although I feel like you're still maybe a little bit behind what you were expecting, you know, if you've just been starting him all season.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, I kind of hedged on this because I think in the league that I have Chapman in, I actually also have Manny Machado. So it was more of Chapman being like, you know, the safety valve, so to speak, in that case, rather than like the guy that I want to have as my main starter. Now, that being said, Machado has not had a great season either, so that has not really worked out well for me. It was a great draft strategy. In reality, though, it has not been the best result. But I just think that at this point, he's just like an okay starter. But there might be some occasional waiver wire guys that are going to be better than him as the season goes along.
Yeah, I think if you do see him out there, though, anywhere, you know, definitely grab him in case his heater is kind of a sign of things to come. On the pitching side, someone else who has just been on a great run lately, Stakewell Brand Dunn for Brandon Young was Nick's SP roundup. But I'm going to talk about Reed Detmers, actually. So he, for the Angels, he was at the Dodgers in the LA battle in this one. He took the no decision, but he went six scoreless with two hits, two walks, and six strikeouts, 14 whiffs, and a 33% CSW on 91 pitches. And Detmers, yeah, he came into this tough matchup unintimidated. He had his velo up on his fastball a little bit, sitting up a tick at 95. And he just kind of dominated with that pitch in the zone, got 11 whiffs and some batted ball luck too, you know, 11 out of 13 outs on balls in play, even though the rest of his arsenal aside from the heater was not really that sharp. No command of the slider, which is something that Nick has been concerned about in the past. Changeup and curveball kind of went in and out, so he only had 47% strikes on his secondaries, which is pretty rough. And Nick felt like the fastball was really just enough to cover up rather than kind of a well-balanced performance here from Detmers. He felt like it was a time to sell high, but he also just spun seven innings, I think with two base runners and no earned runs against the Astros. So another strong offense that he dominated. Even still, that was just got his ERA down to almost exactly 4.0 and his strikeout rate close to 30%. So the skills here are kind of hinting at Detmers should have a better ERA than he does have. But at the same time, Nick is saying that he feels like that one might be the time to sell. Where do you kind of fall? Do you look more at the ERA estimators and think there's some positive regression coming here? Or do you think that the skills are going to get worse, so you should probably sell now?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because like for today's, or I should say Wednesday's play performances, I wanted to talk about Chapman and Detmers, but and it was like, oh, well, you took him, so can't talk about him again. I want to talk about Detmers too, because yeah, it was his game yesterday was incredible. Seven innings, nine strikeouts against Houston, no walks, right? Only gave up one hit. And it's one of those things where like clearly the skills are there with the strikeout rate. The whip is also incredible right now for him. But part of me just thinks like the volatility is the part that I can't really love, right? He has six quality starts in 14 total starts. He only has two wins, which I mean, he plays for the Angels. We don't really expect that much from him in that department. But I think the six quality starts really just speaks to the fact that like, yeah, he's not really the most consistent guy. And so I think if there's someone who's willing to take Detmers off your hands in this case, then sure, I would definitely do that. I also wouldn't mind holding in the sense that you just know that, like, even though he's going to get you a lot of strikeouts, those strikeouts are going to come with maybe some not so great ERAs, not so great ratios. He's going to give up. He actually hasn't given up a lot of homers this year, actually. That's maybe the kind of interesting thing for him. But that ERA is just really, really high and not something that I love. But the strikeouts and the whip are still pretty solid. So, you know, if you're willing to kind of tolerate maybe the lack of any sort of wins or quality starts from him and the lack of, like, a reliable ERA, but, you know, a good amount of strikeouts and whip help, then, you know, I could see a reason for wanting to hold on to him.
Yeah, I think, you know, you should be open to offers for sure. I do think it's not necessarily realistic. So he's got a career best strikeout minus walk right now at 22%, which is pretty much elite. But last year in the bullpen, it was 21%. So I just have a hard time, like, believing that his skills are going to improve moving from the rotation moving from the bullpen to the rotation, excuse me. His velo is down like 2 ticks on pretty much all his pitches. He's getting fewer swings and misses, but not fewer strikeouts. So I think that he can be like a strikeout per inning guy, maybe slightly more, but I don't think that the 29 to 30% rate we're seeing is necessarily sustainable. So yeah, I think there is some ratio risk here. And if you play in a wins league, you know, strikeouts is really Detmer's most reliable category. If you play in like a quality starts league or something like that, where he's going to deliver a little bit more in that department than wins, you know, a little more value there. But yeah, I think I'd be open to offers. I'm not running away from it necessarily, maybe like Nick is saying, but at the same time, he's a guy who consistently kind of underperforms his ERA estimator. So I wouldn't look at his 2.87 FIP or 3.45 XFIP and just think, oh, he's been super unlucky, that'll change, because that's kind of what his whole career has been. And we're at 500 innings now, so it's not like a small sample type thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at our pitcher list sort of career stats for him. He's got a 4.17 career XERA compared to a career 4.65 ERA, right? So part of this just feels like, hey, the strikeouts are really going well for him. He's also doing a really good job in hit suppression this season. BABIP is also a career low at 273. So there are some things here where you look at, you know, some of these stats. Like, yeah, it feels like he's getting a little lucky. He's doing hit suppression, which is really, really good, but there isn't really necessarily something to point to that being the case. Like you mentioned in this start that you're talking about, his fastball was really good. Well, in this start against Houston, his slider was really, really good. It didn't give up a single hit, I believe. Yeah, 4 balls in play, 4 outs. Had 6 whiffs, 10 called strikes, and 33 thrown. But if he only has like 1 or 2 pitches, or just really 1 pitch working, and all the other pitches are kind of, you know, doing enough to get him by, that sometimes screams a little bit of volatility. All right, moving on to Saturday's games. We're going to look at hitters with the Count of La Monte Cristo by Kevin O'Brien, talking about Lamont Wade, who was signed and then injured, I believe. So kind of unfortunate for him, you know, being able to get the major league contract again, but then going on the 10-day IL, unfortunately. But we're not going to talk about Lamont Wade. We're going to talk about Dominic Canzone. He went 3-for-4 with a double, a homer, a run, and 2 RBI. He's had a nice little breakout season, showing that last year's 141 WRC plus was not a mirage. He did that in 82 games, had 11 homers. This year, he's got 8 homers through 60 games so far. He's slashing 277, 343, 520, which is pretty good. It's good enough for a 144 WRC plus. He's also managed to cut the strikeout rate by a little bit this season. He's currently the everyday DH for the Mariners too, so it's nice to see him get, you know, basically consistent at-bats in that offense, even with, you know, home games at T-Mobile. But yeah, I mean, just looking at kind of the player that Canzone is, I'm looking up his positional eligibilities because he's played so much at DH this year. It looks like he's just outfield eligible. So kind of with that understanding, you know, what league depth are you looking at potentially picking up Canzone, you know, with these decent ratios, you know, okay homer numbers, okay average numbers? Is this the guy that you'd want to target even in a 12-teamer?
Yeah, I think it's 12-team, 5-outfield. 12-team, 3-outfield, I think he's, you know, still fine on the wire unless it's like a great, you know, week stream or something. I did add him in one of my OCs for the week where my offense is kind of weak. You know, I think they had 7 road games and 6 of them were righties. So, you know, like that kind of matchup string for him and both Luke Rayleigh too. But yeah, I think that's kind of where the utility does stop. He Just the volume can be tough. He's played in 60 games, which is, almost all the Mariners games, but he only has 166 plate appearances, right? So the Raley and Canzone, the Mariners will pinch hit them a lot in the middle of the game. So even if he gets the start, it might not be a full game. So you just got to be wary of that. But yeah, the production on a per plate appearance basis has been great. He does have really good power. He's got good bat speed. He has an elite barrel rate, 16%. It's really impressive. So yeah, I think I might hold him, in my 12 teamer if, I want to cut. I think it's like Dalton Varsho and Gavin Sheets or some of the other guys that I have, and they play more, but they're struggling. So yeah, I think Canzone is maybe a guy, a hold in 12 team five outfielder, but you're not necessarily starting him every scoring period because of the matchups or maybe like a tough home series or something like that.
Yeah, the platoon risk is kind of frustrating, right? It's not something that you can necessarily plan for. It is nice that he's getting basically everyday starts, so feels like he should at least get, 2 to 3 at bats per game. But with yeah, the kind of the risk of just being pulled up at any point if there's, kind of the matchup that makes sense to do it, that does hurt his value a little bit. But yeah, the ratios are pretty solid, which it seems to be in line with what he did last year too. 300 average, 358 OBP last year. So those are actually numbers that are better than what he's doing right now this season. But with kind of the increased power, increased counting stats, that is a nice thing to have from him. Looking at pitchers, we are going to move to Ben Brown. He had 5.1 innings, no earned runs, one hit, one walk, and five strikeouts in his game on Saturday. It's got a bit of a weird season for Brown. He started out in the bullpen before basically needing to get stretched out as a starter due to a bunch of pitching injuries for the Cubs. However, since his first start, he's started 6 games so far. He's at a 1.44 ERA, a 0.77 a WHIP, and a 28.6% strikeout rate. There's a little bit of a luck with those stats. He's got a 213 BABIP in those starts compared to a 301 career average. He's got an incredibly low 5.4 hits per nine, even more absurd 0.16 homers per nine. It's clear the stuff is there. He sports a 12.8% swing strike rate, so that's definitely part of the success for Brown. But do you think he's a guy that can be trusted by this point through 6 starts, or is it really just safer to leave him on the wire, have someone else maybe deal with the potential volatility that Brown comes with?
I think that for the most part, I'd be going out to grab him if he's available anywhere. I feel like the surface stats are probably so good that that's not the case anymore. But it is definitely volatile. He really hurt people last year who kept just buying into the strikeout minus walk rate. Is going to turn around and never did until he eventually got demoted to the bullpen. The biggest difference this year is the sinker he found. What seems like a reliable third pitch. It's fastball, sinker, curveball, I believe, with kind of a sprinkled in changeup. So a narrow arsenal, but one that he is making work so far. But like you said, the ERA regression is definitely coming. I'm also a little skeptical of like his kind of newfound strike throwing ability. I feel like as a prospect, that wasn't really something he was necessarily known for, and his walk rate is pretty low right now. So I don't know how long that is going to last. But yeah, I think that I'd have him and just kind of be careful picking matchups. Like if the wind's blowing out at Wrigley, you can leave him on the bench. But his next two matchups are at San Francisco and home against the Rockies. So, those are even for a guy who where regression is due, those are opportunities that would be hard to pass up.
Yeah, I'm just looking. His numbers have always been kind of weird because, again, he did have quite a few games in the bullpen. I mean, he started out in 2024 with a 28.8% strikeout rate. I believe that was the season he got injured, if I'm not mistaken. But then last year, like you mentioned, he had a 5.92 ERA, 1.44 WHIP, just like numbers that did not look great. 348 BABIP, and just gave up a bunch of homers. That was kind of the issue for him. But yeah, this year somehow he's turned around just a little bit, which is nice to see. And yeah, I mean, I think he's a guy that is just like worth keeping on your roster until, maybe the wheels look like they're starting to fall off, and you can maybe cut bait at that point.
Yeah, I mean these starts, like the matchups that he's had, I feel like they have been maybe a little soft. As Texas at Texas, which is a nice place to pitch. At Atlanta is probably the toughest one. Home against Milwaukee, I think the wind was maybe blown in there. So, and then at Pittsburgh and St. Louis, which are just okay, and then home against San Francisco. So I would say the matchups have skewed a little easier and have are going to continue going that way. So yeah, you might have to just maybe pick and choose your spots, but I think he's worth rostering. So going to the next day of player performances on the 7th. Some of that I think you guys talked about last week a little bit. Bend the knee was Kyle Stanzel's hitter recap for Carson Bend's 5-for-5 day. He was impressive, but we're going to talk about Matt McClain, who also had a great day. He's second base and now shortstop eligible too on the Reds. He was 2-for-4 with two solo homers. And the Reds have been hoping kind of desperately, for the last couple of years even, that McClain can regain his 2023 form when he was first promoted. He had 290, 357, 507 with 16 homers and 14 steals that year in his debut. And he gave us a hint of that, on Sunday and kind of this last week or so. He had a 7th and 8th homer of the season, even though it was a loss. And that just brought McClain's line to 209, 310, 368. But McClain's been getting extended run at shortstop because Ellie is on the IL with the hamstring strain, which, that path to playing time looked in jeopardy a couple weeks ago. So now it's nice to see that he will be in the lineup every day. He's only got a 252 BABIP, so hopefully he can get a little bit of uptick in the batting average department. And yeah, this was a two-homer game for McClain, and then I believe a couple of days ago he had a three-steal game. So he's showing that power speed juice that, people have been hoping to see from him in the last couple of years. So after seeing these really nice last couple of games, are you buying back in on McClain, or are you still staying away and letting someone else take the plunge?
Yeah, I think, based on last week's episode, I still feel like I'm more inclined to stay away, let someone else deal with it. And I think McClain is still maybe only valuable in deeper leagues. Like, I'm not picking him up in the 12 teamer. In a 15 teamer with five outfielders, I think, or sorry, he's an infielder. So I guess just a 15 teamer. There's maybe some value in picking him up, but I think, the one thing we kind of talked about with Josh and I was that, like, the underlying stats for McClain also don't look good. So, yes, he is striking out less. Yes, he's walking more, but none of it really seems to scream that, like, hey, this is a guy who could be a legitimate contributor in fantasy. I think if he gets more playing time after, and if this is consistent for him, I think maybe it's taking a better, closer look at him in 15 teamers. I just don't know if I'm ever going to get to the point where I feel like he's contributing consistently enough to be in a 12 teamer conversation.
Yeah, I think maybe not in like Yahoo 12 teamers. I think in NFBC 12 teamers, he bears consideration. I think my 12 teamer, my offense is weak. My second baseman are like Bryson Stott and Luis Arraez and Luis Garcia, right? Like I don't think McClain's available in that league, but if he was, I'd be considering having him instead of Stott or Garcia. But yeah, McClain's profile, the power speed upside is still, it's clearly still apparent. I think the batting average downside is just real, though. I didn't believe at all in his 290 average that he posted as a rookie, and the 220 and 209 the last couple seasons, kind of show that. He just hits way too many fly balls for someone who he has like an average bat speed and below average hard hit data. I know he plays in Cincinnati where, you can hit balls out that maybe won't go out other places, but for someone with that type of raw power and game power, I just don't really understand the approach. I just wish that he would kind of flatten things out a little bit and yeah, get on base and steal more bases. But he's actually hitting more fly balls with a higher launch angle this year than years past. So clearly he's not, that approach is not necessarily going anywhere. So yeah, that has me concerned about the batting average. So maybe a little bit more valuable in OBP leagues because he is walking 12% of the time.
Yeah, that's what we kind of mentioned in last week's episode, where it was just like, you know what? Like, at the end of the day, he's just like kind of an average hitter, or unless, his bat to ball skills, like, are not necessarily the skills, but just like the underlying metrics aren't that great, unfortunately, and just doesn't necessarily translate to a guy who can be a reliable power speed guy, just like what his rookie season showed. But hey, if he gets more playing time, if he gets more time to, work these issues out in the majors, I think that can only help him. But yeah, I don't know if I'm willing to take a leap on him at this moment.
Right. His bat speed is up 2 ticks from last year. He's making more contact. So he's clearly a better player than he was last year, but that's not a high bar to clear necessarily. So, it's not to say that he's all becoming an all-star again. It's just that he's becoming a little bit more viable because of these improvements. So on the pitching side, another guy who has been definitely frustrating managers this year, Cameron might know a thing or two, was Nick's SP roundup for Noah Cameron. He's on a great run, but I'm going to be talking about Emmett Sheehan of the Dodgers. He was at home against the Angels in this one, seemingly a good matchup, but he took the loss in a super short outing. 1 1/3, 2 earned, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts. 10 whiffs and a 29% CSW on 49 pitches. I was worried when I saw this. I thought that he was hurt, but it turns out the Dodgers just pulled him because it was a super long second inning, and they just didn't want him to be out there for too long and just really run up his pitch count without a break. So they took him out. It was Nick Madrigal, had a 14-pitch at-bat that ended in a walk, and 3 other batters averaged 6 pitches per plate appearance. So Sheehan was just kind of overworked in the inning. Nick feels like we should just ignore it and just move on to Sheehan's next outing. Are you kind of taking the same approach if you have him anywhere, or are you just, you know, considering dropping Sheehan somewhere? You know, he's through 12 starts this year, only 59 innings. He's got a 4.7 ERA and a 1.21 whip with only 3 wins. So, yeah, it's just been a disappointing season for him. So are you considering letting him loose anywhere, or are you just going to ride it out because the win potential is still really good and the strikeout minus walk, you know, is still solid at 19%?
Yeah, I think it's, to me, it's probably just like the win potential and the strikeout minus walk that you mentioned that probably has me hanging around just a little bit. Right? Like the skills look really good. They're just not translating to really good ratios. You know, part of this is he's giving up more home runs this year. Home run per 9 basically is up to 1.67. But I mean, that's kind of bounced around for him in his couple years in the majors. So hard to say whether that's, you know, just kind of who he is or if that's, you know, something that he's regressed in this season. Does have a higher BABIP this year, 292, compared to a career average of 259. But again, he's only pitched in 40 games and 193 innings. So who knows what his real BABIP is there. So yeah, part of me just says like, hey, the skills are good enough that I'm willing to hold on to him and see what happens. He still plays for the Dodgers, who are the second best team in the National League, right? Like that's going to count for something in terms of wins and the run support that he gets. But he is probably, I would say he's maybe on a little bit of thin ice, but I still look at all his starts and it's just like, you know, there's been more good than bad. And I really can't complain about that if I have him on a team.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, 12 team is kind of the shallowest that I play. I'm not ready to drop him there yet, but he's kind of sliding down my pecking order. I feel like when I'm looking at my teams, I usually want to have a good sense of like who's the first hitter I would drop if there's someone I want to add on waivers and who's the first pitcher I would drop if there's a pitcher I want to add on waivers. And Sheehan has kind of been getting closer and closer to being that, you know, first pitcher that I want to drop, even if he's not quite there yet. So the one league I have him, I think I just dropped Nick Lodolo just because he's been awful since he came back from the injury and, you know, tough place to pitch. So obviously I prefer Sheehan to him, but he is getting closer and closer to that. And these leagues I have Scooble in too, right? So Scooble's going to come back and that pitcher is probably going to get cut. So then, yeah, Sheehan might be up on the chopping block next. So I'm definitely going to be watching his next couple outings very closely. And the 6-man rotation, right? You're not going to get really 2-start weeks out of him. So that hurts a little bit too.
Yeah, that's true. You don't get the win chance that you might have with other guys. Yeah, to me, he's a lot like Treya Savage right now in the sense of like he's that last guy, like the guy that you're talking about where I'm willing to think about dropping him. And Sheehan for sure, I think, is, you know, I think he was dropped actually in my home league, which is an 11-teamer. So basically he plays like a 10-teamer. And I was like kind of hesitant to like basically like go out and grab him because I was just like, like I don't know if I like him more than the Savage, for example, right? And even though the ratios look pretty decent, the strikeouts are pretty comparable between the two. I don't know. The Savage has maybe a little bit more potential to be right now, but you know, who knows? That might change a little bit if he keeps walking dudes.
Yeah, what do you have, like 7 in his one of his most recent starts or something? It's crazy.
Yeah, it was awful. All right, moving on to Monday's games, I believe. We are starting with Weekend at Ernie's by Brian Amore. Talking about Ernie Clement, who went 2-for-4 with a homer and an RBI. Clement had a nice couple days over the weekend, had another homer coming on Saturday as well. Granted, he's just never going to be a power hitter, but he has nearly matched his homer total of 9 homers last season. He's got 7 through 68 games this year. Slash line's actually pretty decent through 304, 325, 464. Again, not a guy who walks a lot, but that's because he also has one of the best strikeout rates in the majors, 9.2%. So really more of a points league guy That would be Clement rather than just maybe your normal head-to-head categories guy. But he does play second base, and with second base being the black hole that it is Clement on your radar as someone to pick up even in 12-teamers, or does his kind of the inability to really rack up the counting stats kind of hurt his value even just by being just an average first guy?
Yeah, I think I, watch list him. I was considering picking him up in a league that my infield is 12 teams and my infield is just kind of decimated. Like, I dropped Matt Chapman too early, right? Like, Gleyber Torres went on the IL. So, like, I really need help at those infield spots. And I had him on my watch list, and I think someone else ended up grabbing him. So I was looking at him. I think the fact that it was an OPS league as well as average turned me off a little bit. I know Clement has a good OPS right now, but he's more of a 700 guy kind of for his career. But yeah, I think he, in an average league, like, he kind of is providing a Luis Arias type profile with more power, right? He's got 7 homers and 9 and 12 the last 2 years. So yeah, I think that second base being the tough position it is, and he probably has third base eligibility a lot of places too. And those are two of the toughest positions. So yeah, I'd be happy to have him on my bench and, kind of plug and play when he's in a good heater, or maybe he's like facing an easy lefty or something like that. Not seeing any skills growth necessarily, but he's clearly the type of guy who sprays the ball over the field, and then he'll go and pull a fly ball, try to hit a home run down the line when he gets a really nice pitch to hit. So yeah, I think that he is like not a drop everything and go get him type guy, but he has a spots of utility for sure.
Yeah, just, he'll probably finish the season with double digit homers, but nothing crazy, maybe like 12 or 13. Probably hopefully an average in the 300 range, right? It might drop to 290. We'll see. But, I agree. Probably the biggest reason why he is maybe valuable is that second base, third base eligibility. So like, if you have a league that also has, middle and corner infielder spots, that makes him pretty valuable, I think. But, in standard 12 teamers, I agree. He's probably more of a bench dude than a guy that you, would be excited about starting every single day.
Yeah, and I do think our player pages with the spray angle adjusted ex-WOBA are useful for Clement. He's still overperforming, but 343 WOBA versus 318 are expected, but the Savant expected is 276. So, I think we're capturing those pulled fly balls. If you look at his spray chart on Savant, he has one home run to the right of even left center field, right? So he is very much, when he wants to do damage, he's going straight to the pull side and trying to sneak balls out. So I think that's something that it's not, worth completely buying into, but like, there's hitters who do that, like Isak Paredes, right? That's how he hits his home run. So yeah, I think that the expected slugging on Savant of, 352 is probably a little bit low, even if his power is, pretty mediocre.
Yeah. All right, moving on to pitching. Thanks to Nick for the Seymour Skimmer SB Roundup article. And we're going to talk about Logan Webb, went 8 innings, 1 and run, 5 hits, no walks, and 7 strikeouts. This is clearly peak Webb. It's his third start back from the injury list, and he was using everything with all 5 of his pitches with over 10% usage. So just kind of, doing very much the kitchen sink sort of strategy. And it worked out. Everything looked to be pretty well located too. Pretty good separation on all his pitches. Got 11 whiffs on the night total. He's been more bad than good this season. I mean, that's kind of been the challenge with Webb. But, since he's come back from the injury list, he's basically come up with 2 really, really solid outings after his still ill at Colorado. So just never a good situation there. But yeah, maybe this is a sign of, good things coming for Webb. How much do you trust him to stay as kind of this SP2, SP3 quality starting pitcher? Or do you think more kind of what he was showcasing earlier in the season, where he was giving up, 3 to 4 earned runs, was really having some ERA issues? Is that more really who Webb is right now, or have the last 2 starts been a little bit more what you expected?
Yeah, it's definitely been a welcome sight for me. I did target him in some leagues as a really steady kind of SP2. So I'm happy to see it. I do think that I do expect that SP2, maybe like high end SP3 production from him going forward. But I think that like the upside that he'll volume his way to like a back end SP1 is kind of gone. The strikeout rate has regressed right back to his, even slightly below his career average after it was all the way up at 26% last year. I was hoping that some of those gains would maybe stick around. but the swing and miss has regressed a little bit, and so has the strikeout rate along with it. So yeah, I think that, he'll just kind of be a steady, dependable 2-3 going forward, which, I'm happy with, even if it's not, going to pay off tremendously. I also feel like a lot of people have been talking about if he's been impacted by the ABS. He's obviously a sinker baller, huge called strikes guy, and is the zone shrinking a little bit hurting him? So he does have a career low called strike rate, just by a little bit, but it is a career low. So, maybe that is playing a little bit of a factor too that makes him more of a kind of top, he's not an ace in real life, not an ace in fantasy either, and those limitations are kind of made clear by, this little shrinking of the strike zone a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he had that one really good season. Was it 2021? Yeah, where he had the 26% strikeout rate, and we're like, hey, this guy can strike a lot of people out. Maybe this is for real, and he's kind of settled in that 20 to 22 range, except for last season, which you mentioned. So it is kind of interesting that, like, hey, if the called strikes are coming down because that's just the way he approaches batters at the plate, like, does that affect him? And yeah, he has a 20.9% strikeout rate right now. But part of that, I think, is because the swing strike rate has also fallen for him just a little bit. But yeah, it's super interesting to see how he's adjusting at least to this kind of new environment. BABIP is still around the same. The ground ball rates are around the same for him. Still an elite guy in terms of inducing ground balls. But yeah, the ERA being up this year was a little worrying. But it's nice to see that he's at least shown some stuff the last two seasons to be really solid still. Or sorry, last two starts to be really solid still.
Yep, hopefully, the knee was maybe nagging him a little bit before he went on the IL and explaining some of the rougher starts. And now that that's cleared up a little bit, he'll be more consistent moving forward. So going to the ninth, on the hitter side, Griffey Geist was on our hitter recap for Dingler All the Way for Dylan Dingler, who is really having a breakout season at catcher. I'm going to be talking about a guy who, not a breakout season because he's been in the league for so long, but definitely a resurgence for Matt Olson, a first baseman for Atlanta. He was 2-for-4 with two home runs on the ninth and is cooking against the White Sox. It was two home runs in his first two plate appearances. Got the opener, Brandon Isert, in his first at bat. And then he got Eric Fetty in his second one. Both of the homers just over 400 feet. And he's in line online or on pace to post his highest slugging and expected wOBA since 2023 this year. And of course, we know that 2023 was that crazy season for Matt Olson. I believe it was 54 home runs when the Braves offense. Yeah, 54 home runs, over 260 runs in RBI when the Braves offense was just absolutely ridiculous. He's not quite on those crazy paces right now, but he is on pace to clear 200 runs in RBI easily and 40 homers too while hitting 272. So do you feel like Matt Olson is kind of back to not necessarily that crazy first round value type form, but just really bouncing back to kind of like a top 15 hitter after a couple of pedestrian by his standard seasons where he just hit under 30 homers and didn't get to 100 runs or RBI.
Yeah, I mean, I will say what Matt Olson is doing is making me really annoyed because I was, as usual, super in on Vlad, and that has not worked out very well. And just seeing Matt Olson kind of basically turn around his, I don't want to say turn around his career because I mean, the last two seasons he's had 29 homers. That's pretty solid. But yeah, he's just done a really good job this year, I guess, of putting just hitting homers in general, which is funny. You look at all his stats and you're like, oh, it's actually around the same as like all his past years, right? He's striking out just a little bit less, but not that much. His barrel rate's like a little bit better than it was last year, but not by that much either. But it just seems like he's doing a good job of turning on these pitches when he can, and turning them into homers. Like even his max EV is like lower than it was last year, but yeah, somehow something has kind of clicked for him this year, which is impressive. And I'm glad that he's kind of back and turning this around. I mean, he's not a young player anymore. He's 32 years old. But nice to see a little bit of a career resurgence for him, if you can call it that, kind of in his early 30s.
Yeah, it does seem like, not a ton. There haven't been any huge changes, kind of as you would expect for a guy who's such a veteran. He is swinging a little bit harder. His bat speed's up a tick. He's hitting a lot of fly balls, like even more than usual. So I guess he is just kind of leaning into, just being a power hitter. I think His fly ball rate is in the 85th percentile we have on our player pages, and on Fangraphs, his fly ball rate it might be over 50%, which is really high. Let's see, 48%, which is on pace for a career high. So yeah, I think he's just kind of leaning into that, and he's back to pulling his fly balls at the same rate that he has for his career after it took a little bit of a step back last year. So yeah, I think he is just kind of maxing out his power hitting ability right now. So yeah, this is nice to see, and I do think it's generally sustainable. Maybe not the batting average at 272, but the power aspect does seem like it is here to stay.
Right. The weird, it, like, I'm just looking at his player profile and nothing jumps out to me as like that was a massive improvement, you know? Yeah, I guess maybe some of the things you could point to, expected slugging has gone up this year, so you know, maybe he's doing a little bit better job with just you know, the numbers that go into that sort of calculation, in terms of, barrels and exit velo and all that good stuff. But yeah, you just look at it and it's like, yeah, a lot of it's the same as last year. And you know, I think that maybe actually like screamed to me that like, hey, this is actually working out for him, as opposed to just being like, oh, this is gonna crumble and he's gonna hit only 10 homers for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it could be just a lot of small tweaks, kind of adding up. On the hitting side, on the ninth, or on the pitching side, excuse me. Now, if I may, for Dustin May, who's on a great run, it was Nick's SP roundup. I'm going to talk about Taj Bradley, though, who's kind of on the other side of the coin, unfortunately, for your Twins. He has regressed after a really strong start. He was at Detroit, took the loss in this one, 4 1/3, 5 earned, 7 hits, 3 walks, and 3 strikeouts, 6 whiffs, only a 20% CSW on 89 pitches. That's three straight rough ones for Bradley. I don't know if those are his only three starts since he came off the IL, but at least his three most recent since being activated. This one, he just didn't have feel for the splitter, only 1 strike on 10 thrown. And he's just missing, kind of erratically with the pitch. And that's something we've seen with Tosh in the past. His shot, his command definitely goes in and out, and Nick feels like he just really does not trust it right now. The regression has him at, I think it's above a 4 ERA and a whip, maybe around 1.3. So do you feel like Bradley is just kind of a drop everywhere now, or are you benching maybe some places in hopes that he might turn it around and he can take advantage of that strikeout upside in the next couple of months at some point?
I mean, I've dropped him in a 12-teamer. I don't have a lot of faith in him being consistent. Like he did look great at the beginning of the season. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Had like 3 straight wins in April. Only had like one start that was above 2 earned runs until he got injured. And even his first start back from the injured list, he looked pretty decent. It was 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, only gave up 1 earned run. But yeah, part of it is just maybe some. I was looking this up. I think he has some like homer volatility, where this year he's got a 1.25 homer per nine, 23% home run per fly ball rate. He's just generally a fly ball pitcher, and that just sometimes that just blows up for him, unfortunately. And I think because of that volatility, where you just don't know when that's going to happen for him, it makes it harder for me to want to see him more than anything but a streamer. I don't think he's a guy that I would be keeping on my roster long term, but if the matchup makes sense, then yeah, for sure, I think about it.
Yeah, the combination of above average home run rate and above average walk rate is really difficult to kind of fight against, even if he is a good strikeout guy. So yeah, I think that drop shallow leagues pretty easily. 15 teamers, right? You probably the talent of the arms on the waiver wire probably aren't good enough that you can just let him go. Maybe this last home start this weekend against the Cardinals, who are kind of a middle of the road offense. Maybe they're doing better than that this year, but I don't necessarily believe in them to do better than that. Maybe that's kind of the last chance that you give him just to see maybe if there's some sign of life there. But yeah, I mean, Taj Bradley, he's really talented, right? But we've seen, maybe why the Braves were willing to part with him, is some starts like this. He's made 85 starts now in his career, 450 innings with a 4.74 ERA and a 1.31 WHIP, right? So I'd expect him to be better than that, going forward, but he's still got, a ways to go from that to really be, kind of a valuable fantasy starter, especially in a wins league, where he's not going to get a ton of those right now with how the Twins are doing.
Yeah, if you want a silver lining, it's this. This start, he gave up three homers. The start against Tampa Bay, where I think he got tagged for six earned runs, he gave up four homers in that one. Besides that, he's only had two other games where he's given up homers. He only gave up one in both of those. So, the home run rate, it's not great, but it's basically due to two starts. And if you think that on the, on the consistency basis, he is more likely to not give up home runs than than the stats would seem to indicate. Then maybe you feel better about it. But the reality is, like, even in the starts that he hasn't necessarily given up home runs, he still has had some earned run issues. And so it's not like a perfect, like, hey, he doesn't give up a homer. That he doesn't give up a homer, that means he's going to have a good start. Like, that's just not the, that's just the inconsistent thing with him right now, too.
Yeah, I think it's, for your roster decision, it's like, am I looking for upside or am I looking for someone who I can use consistently? And if you're looking for upside, you can have Bradley on your team and start him, when you need to. But if you're like in an injury pinch or you just don't want to leave any starts on the bench ever, I think that he's a guy who you probably won't. It'll be too much of a headache to have him on your team.
Yeah, and the walk rate's scary too. 10.2%, like, I just having that on a day in and day out basis is just never a good recipe for a pitcher. All right, moving on to Wednesday's games. Thanks to Ben Solo for Jazz in the Park, talking about Jazz Chisholm, who's been stepping up in Aaron Judge's absence. But we're going to talk about Fernando Tatis Jr. 2 for 5 with a homer, a run, and 2 RBI. He hit his second homer of the year. This was actually a walk-off, so nice job for him. Really good in homer, 106 miles an hour off the bat. So, but it was more of a line drive, which maybe is kind of indicative of Tatis this entire year, where he just hasn't been able to hit homers at all. He hits the ball super, super hard. It's just not going really up in the air. It's more just flatter into the ground. And probably the stat that you want to pull out is the fact that he has a 9.1% pulled air rate. So even though he's got a lot of power, it's not really being translated into the best way to hit homers. And that's maybe okay for Tatis because all the other stats are still pretty decent for him. Just looking up his numbers, he does have a 281 average, 347 OBP. The slugging's not great because he's not hitting homers, but he still has 15 steals to boot. So, if you just kind of disregard the homer number and really some of the other counting stats, he only has 25 runs and 21 RBI. He has second base eligibility, which is really awesome. But basically, he's a guy who has really good average, really good stolen base numbers, and plays second base. And to me, that still feels like a little bit of a letdown from where he was drafted as earlier this season. So, with your kind of looking at who Tatis is and the second base eligibility piece for him, is this a guy that you're still willing to hold on for the rest of the season because of how bad second base is? Or are you kind of looking to trade him and maybe take advantage of the fact that maybe other people want him because he now has second base eligibility?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you have like a struggling, highly drafted player, you know, it's good to listen to offers. I don't think you should just put your head down and say he's going to get better because it's not that obvious that he's going to get better because of all those, swing changes and bat at ball profile changes that you're talking about. I do still feel like because of the good eligibility and the speed and average, I'd be hoping to get like a top 60 player back, and I just don't know if someone's gonna give you that, for a guy who's on a basically a 5 home run pace. So yeah, I think that, I'm open to it, but I think that he's offering enough in some other categories that, I'm not just trying to sell for anything. But yeah, if there's he's not making a good case for convincing us that his homers early in his career were not because of the PEDs that he was busted for. Like, this is, he hasn't cleared 30 homers since he got busted, and he's clearly regressing now. So it is concerning. I'd be lying if I said that I saw this, drop off completely coming. But yeah, this just tells you how much, how important it is to pull the ball in the air unless you just have crazy pop and can hit it out to all fields.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me, unfortunately, a lot of Vlad, who I think has 4 or 5 homers on the season. Who they hit the ball super hard. Tatis has a 114 max EV, but he's got a 3.5 degree launch angle, so it's just flat or into the ground, and it's just not turning into homers. Which, like, again, homers aren't everything, right? And maybe he's making these swing changes in an active reason to increase the average, but I mean, he's hit for really good average before. and still was able to have power as well. So it is kind of weird that, like, this season of all seasons, that the launch angle has just absolutely cratered, and he's just not making, and he's just not lifting the ball more, maybe is the way to think about it.
Right, and it does tell you that, you know, not all barrels are created equal, right? He still has an above average barrel rate despite all the ground balls and an elite hard hit rate, which obviously doesn't consider launch angle. But if you're hitting a lot of those barrels to the center of the field, you know, you got to hit them really, really hard for them to get out. I do think the power will, of course, pick up a little bit. I feel like San Diego, it's a little tough in, you know, the beginning and end of the season, but I think it plays a little bit more to hitters in the summer months when it's pretty warm there. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, get to double digits, but that's still Fernando Tatis' second round or first round pick we're talking about, hopefully getting to double digit home runs, right? So that does tell you how much the profile has changed.
Yeah. And the bat swing metrics seem to agree with it. His attack angle has decreased basically as years gone by. And you think that'd be something that you could fix, but, you know, maybe that's just not the case for Tatis, unfortunately. All right, moving on to pitchers. Thanks to Nick for the scoring on the Cobb SP Roundup article. Actually, I think it was scoring on the Rob, which was talking about Robbie Ray, who he thinks is pretty much a drop at this point, which is kind of unfortunate. He was having a nice season. But we're going to talk about Parker Messick instead, another guy who actually dealt with a pretty poor start. Going up against the Yankees, who still dangerous, even without Aaron Judge. 5.2 innings, 4 in runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Half of his 3+ earned run games have come in his last 2 games, which is actually kind of an impressive number. It hasn't been that great of a year for him, it hasn't been that great of a two weeks for him. This start was kind of a result of his changeup really not being effective at all. Only had 1 CSW on 27 thrown. And the weird thing, of course, that Nick pointed out in his SP Roundup article, though, was that his fastball was actually a tick higher, sitting at 95 miles an hour, which is a little bit better than what he was showing last week at 92 miles an hour. And so, yeah, his velo went up, and for some reason, he still had a really bad game. Yankees just really were, somehow keying in on his changeup really effectively. And so maybe this is just, you know, a throwaway start. And maybe that last start too was also a throwaway start. Who's to say? But that all being said, Parker Messick, really, really good, really good numbers this year. Do these last 2 starts shake any sort of confidence in him, or is he a guy who, let's just say, someone rage dropped him in your league, would you be basically like running to go pick him up right now?
Yeah, I'd absolutely go get him. I think that this is just kind of natural regression. He's kind of like a pitchability lefty, right? He's got a nice 6-pitch arsenal and he commands everything well, but nothing is overpowering. So I think it was unreasonable to expect him to, you know, post like a mid-2s or even high-2s ERA, you know, over the course of the season, which is where he's at right now. So yeah, I'd go get him anywhere if someone did let him go, or if they're trying to sell, you know, low because they feel like the bottom's going to fall out. He still hasn't allowed more than 4 earned runs in any start this year. It has just kind of been super consistent. Yeah, he's gone 5 innings every single game. So I think that that kind of consistency with this little more strikeout upside that we're seeing from him this year, you know, makes him a really useful kind of mid-rotation arm. So, yeah, I don't unfortunately have him anywhere, and that's something I've been kicking myself for. So, you know, this regression wasn't surprising to me. I didn't, you know, have to deal with it anywhere. But, yeah, I think that he's just kind of a solid, you know, mid-rotation type guy, and I don't think that these couple starts have really changed my outlook of him all that much.
Yeah, I think I picked him up early in the year in, I think, my home league, and then dropped him probably after that 4 earned run start that he had. But, yeah, since then he's been really solid. I've kind of been annoyed that I did drop him. But, yeah, hopefully some of you have the chance to pick him up after this most recent start. All right, that's going to be it for player performances. We are going to move on to streamers, and I'll do a little bit of recap because it was my streamers the last 2 weeks. We'll start out with Robert Urania, who's just had a really solid, actually, couple of weeks in general. But he had the win, 6 innings, 3 hits, 3 runs, 3 walks, and 7 strikeouts 2 weeks ago. chalked that up to a win. Michael McGreevy of the Cardinals, no decision in his first start, 6 innings, 5 hits, 2 runs, 1 strikeout, and a no decision in his second start as well, but it was a little bit better in terms of the strikeouts. He had 6 innings, 5 hits, 2 runs, no walks, but 5 Ks in that one. So chalked that up to a win as well. Zebby Matthews in his start, 7 innings. I believe this was Reds carpet, if I can remember correctly. I think it was the Royals. 7 innings, 5 hits, 2 runs, 4 walks, 2 strikeouts. So even though the strikeout numbers are a little bit down, overall, still a pretty good start from him. So chalk that up to a win. And David Sandlin did not return at all. 4 innings, 8 hits, 8 runs, 4 walks, and 4 strikeouts in his first start against Minnesota. And then 3.1 innings, 3 hits, 3 runs, 3 walks, and 6 strikeouts in his second one. So even though the strikeouts were nice, the rest of the start, not so good. So overall, 3 wins, 1 loss. So that brings our record up to 14, 10, and 7. 7 pushes. And last week we had Walker Buehler. He had an okay first start. I believe he gets his second start this weekend. Gage Jump has Rocky Road coming on Saturday, but this start is going to be in Vegas. So I didn't know that to start out with, and now I'm a little more scared about that one. That might not work out very well. And then Dustin May, he was the title boy 2 days ago for Nick's SB Roundup article. Really, really solid outing for him. So we'll see how this all works out for those three guys next week.
Yeah, very, very nice work on the streamer front there while I'm out. Hopefully it wraps up well for you. Next week, I think it's going to be a little challenging. I think there might be no or only like a couple of 7-game weeks next week, so the volume is just a little bit low. Yeah, what I have here is first Randy Vasquez of the Padres, like kind of borderline in terms of rostership for streamer, but his rostership rate is probably dropping because of some poor starts lately. But he gets 1 start at Texas, so I feel decent about that, even if the upside isn't super high. Martin Perez of Atlanta, 26% Yahoo, 28% CBS. He gets a home start against the Giants, only a 1 start week, but a good win chance there. Trevor McDonald of the Giants, 11% Yahoo, 25% CBS. He's supposed to get 1 start at the Marlins, but it is tentative because Tyler Molly is working his way back from the IL. So make sure you check on that. Just make sure that he is confirmed for that start before you add him. And then last one, definitely the biggest ratio risk, but wanted to get a 2-start guy in there. It's Andrew Alvarez, newly in the Nationals rotation. He gets a 2-start week home against Kansas City for the first one and then at the Rays. But who are a good offense, but not as good against lefties. Both of these teams are below average in WRC plus against lefties. So I don't think, you know, it's something that I wouldn't be considering in 12 teamers, but, you know, just wanted to get a 2-start option in there for people to consider. He does have, you know, 25% strikeout rate this year. So that's some upside there.
Yeah, I will just say Martin Perez, I'm very much enjoying this late career resurgence for him. Very much did not expect him to be continue starting at this point in the year. But yeah, it's kind of fun that he's still doing that. But yeah, and then I'm surprised with Randy Vasquez. I mean, he's been up and down, but he's been mostly up this season. Really impressive for what he's doing with the Padres. But yeah, rage drops always happen in fantasy. So if he's available in your leagues, definitely go pick him up, because I think he's a guy who, at least I think, in 12 teamers probably should be rostered everywhere by this point. I mean, hard to say, depending on your league makeup, but I mean, he's a good enough starter that he's at least earned premium streamer status, I think, by this point. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, it might not be a hold all year, but I you know, obviously there's been some rough outings lately, but it hasn't just been, it's completely fallen apart. So I think he's still, you know, worth keeping on your radar.
All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Again, you can find us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. Send us your comments or questions at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnK. You can find Patrick at PFitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you listen to your podcast, and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Pro. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcherless Discord and get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.